Okay, bismillah wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa man wala wa ba. This is our 16th session for level 2 of fiqh. Mustawa Thani, second level of Medina program fiqh. And we're at the end of the last topic that this course deals with. That is the performance of Hajj. And we've covered in the past few sessions the arkan of Hajj and the types of Hajj and the description of Hajj Tamattu. We started the questions last week. I think we did the first 8 questions. And so we want to continue where we left off. Yani with the question number 9. And hopefully, inshallah, we'll be able to finish these questions today. In which case, we will be finished with this course in fiqh for the second level of the Medina program. I just want to mention now, in case I forget later on, that if we finish the questions today, then we'll be finished with this course, except that, you know, what we have explained here in terms of the fiqh of Hajj is sort of a summary. Yani it covers the essentials of Hajj, but because the intent or the purpose or objective of this course, yani, is twofold. That is to cover the fiqh of any particular matter, like in this case Hajj or Umrah. But the other purpose is to to explain and to look at some of the grammatical rules that are studied in the second level of the Medina program. So, yani, part of the focus is on vocabulary words and technical terminology and grammatical rules. So it's not like pure fiqh, like we're really studying the fiqh. So obviously some of the details of the Hajj, you know, are not covered, as in any other topic that we've covered in this book. Yani, some of the details are not covered. So because it's Hajj season right now, and because we have a few brothers and sisters who are actually going to Hajj, then and then for the benefit of everyone, yani, we would like to cover the Hajj in detail, at least in one session. So if we finish this these questions today, then next week, inshallah, we'd like to take one session to deal with Hajj from the beginning to the end, explaining some of the details that we didn't mention, that are not mentioned in this book. Okay, there are some, you know, important details. You know, they're not the fundamentals of Hajj, but they are important details. Some matters about which there's difference of opinion, some supplications that are not mentioned here. We're going to look at them, and inshallah, we'll have some notes that will be in written form, so that, and you don't have to take a lot of notes, but at least so that we can follow from the beginning to the end. Okay, so Lani, for today, let's go to page. What page are we on? Question number 9, huh? 29. Page 29. Now. Yeah, next week. Next week, inshallah, we're gonna do Hajj in detail. Like, hopefully today we'll finish with these questions. Then next week we'll go into the Hajj in detail. And the following week we'll start the level 2 Hadith. And level 2 Hadith. Now, Mustawa Thani, the Hadith course, that's like this. Yani, it's part of this second level Medina course. These two topics, to me, yani, are from the most important of what they study in level 2, along with the grammar, that is the fiqh and Hadith. So, we definitely will benefit a lot from the grammatical rules, some of the vocabulary, technical terminology, and of course, yani, from the Hadith themselves. And he's studying the Hadith, hopefully memorizing some of them. Part of learning Islam is memorizing. Memorizing the Quran, memorizing the Hadith, memorizing, you know, ahkam and rules of fiqh and things like this. So, you know, we have to train ourselves and push ourselves to start memorizing. So we have 20 hadith in this course that we're going to be doing. 20 hadith, at least half of them are less than 10 words. Yani, manageable for almost everybody. Yani, there shouldn't be anyone that can't memorize a hadith of 10 words. Okay, maybe the ones that are a little bit longer, okay, we can excuse, you know, someone who finds difficulty with it. But what's important, yani, the most important thing is that we understand the meaning of these hadith. We study them in Arabic. We learn the meanings and the benefits that come from them. And if we can memorize them along with it, that is really tremendous if we can memorize the hadith. And if we can memorize all 20 of them, Allahu Akbar. If not, at least those half, the half that are very, very short hadith, memorize those at least, inshallah. But we need to start memorizing. Okay, so again, we're on page what? 29. Page 29. So we're at question number 9. I don't really want to go back and read again the text for this lesson for the sake of time, just to make sure that we finish. But hopefully, yani, hopefully we have read it, you know, at least a couple of times. I think I sent a reminder reminding us to review before you come to class. So hopefully, yani, the information is still clear in our minds from last week when we read it. Question number 9 is, Mata yugadiru al-hujjaj muzdalifa? Mata yugadiru al-hujjaju muzdalifa? Okay, the first thing, what is the meaning of the question? When will the pilgrims leave Muzdalifa? Okay, before we answer that question, what is Muzdalifa? What is Muzdalifa? Yani, not everybody knows what is Muzdalifa, right? Not everybody knows Muzdalifa. Not every Muslim knows. If you say, you know, what is Muzdalifa? Is it a person, a place, a time, a season? Maybe they don't have a clue, right? So maybe we need to start with that before we answer the question. What is Muzdalifa? Now, who wants to answer? Okay, it's a place near Mecca. Near Mecca. Now, it's a place right outside of Mecca. Now, between Arafat and Mina, more exactly, between Arafat and Mina. Now, yani, there's Mecca, there's Mina, Muzdalifa, and then Arafat in that order. So it's right outside of Mecca, very, very close, between Arafat and Mina. Okay, so the question is, when do the pilgrims leave from this place, Muzdalifa? When do they leave from there? Okay, who wants to answer? Yes, now, Abu Bakr. Yughadiru al-Hujjaju. قبل طلوع الشمس. يعني he said يغادر الحجاج مزدلفة قبل طلوع الشمس. طيب نعم. جيد. Anybody want to add to that anything? That's the answer for sure. But is there something that maybe we can add just for the benefit, for the sake of benefit? نعم. نعم في صباح يوم العاشر. نعم. So in the day, on the 10th day, yani on the 10th day of the month of Dhul-Hijjah, yani before the rising of the sun. So what do they do on that 10th day in Muzdalifa before they actually leave? Hey, go ahead, Musa. Okay, go ahead, Abu Bakr. Yusalli Salatul Fajr. Now, Yusalli Salatul Fajr and... ويدعو الله عند المشعر الحرام or any place in Muzdalifa and then يغادر يعني قبل طلوع الشمس. جيد. Okay, so يعني a point here of benefit, brothers and sisters, a point of great benefit is that if we understand this is the sunnah of our Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم, this is what's legislated, يعني that a person after leaving from Arafat, goes to Muzdalifa and prays Maghrib and Isha there and sleeps the night there and stays there until the morning and prays Fajr there and then supplicates, yani dua, dhikr and dua, at Mash'ar al-Haram, the sacred monument, or any place in Muzdalifa, and then they leave before sunrise. This makes us to understand that it is legislated and it's from the sunnah and it is of great importance that a person spend the night at Muzdalifa, the whole night, and pray Fajr at Muzdalifa, and stand remembering Allah at Al-Mashar Al-Haram, as Allah mentioned in the Quran, yani, up until the sky is bright before the sunrise, and then they will leave just before sunrise. So this is from the yani important yani acts of worship for Hajj, that a person spends the whole night in Muzdalifa. And they pray Fajr prayer at Muzdalifa. And the Prophet ﷺ exempted the people who are sick or weak or elderly who can't bear yani the hardship of going with the crowds. He allowed those people to leave before Fajr, to leave from Muzdalifah before Fajr. Yani that's a special permission for certain people. That's not a general permission for everybody that you can leave at midnight. Rather, it's a permission for people who are unable, who have difficulty, hardship, medical, elderly, whatever, to leave before Fajr, not at midnight. Okay, so we just want to make a note of that, because this is a common mistake of the people that they leave after midnight, and there's no permission to leave after midnight for anybody. Rather, the permission is for the sick and the elderly to leave before Fajr prayer. Before Fajr prayer. Now, and the stoning on that day of the big Jamara cannot be done before Fajr. Cannot be done before Fajr. As is what happens when people leave in the middle of the night and they get there to Mina and they throw the stones when they arrive during the night. This is not permissible. It's not permissible. Okay, anyway, I just want to make this note of the importance of spending the night at Muzdalifah. Question number 10. إِلَىٰ أَيْنَ يَتَوَجَّهُونَ مِنْ مُزْدَالِفَةٍ نعم. إِلَىٰ أَيْنَ. What's the meaning of the question? نعم. Where are they heading? Where are they going? Naam. Where are they heading out when they're leaving from Muzdalifah? Ila aina. To where? Ila aina yatawajjahuna. Min Muzdalifah ila aina. Naam. Fadl. Nasir. Yatawajjahuna. Naam. Min Muzdalifah ila Mina. Ila Mina. And again, Mina is this is the name of what? It's the name of a person, a place, a time, a place. Mina is a place, a very famous place. Probably people have heard of Mina. And it is very near to Mecca. It's very near to Mecca. And from the rites of Hajj is that a person goes to Mina and do certain acts, okay? And we'll talk about them in the remaining questions, okay? Question number 11. Mada Yamaluna fi Mina. في اليوم العاشر ماذا يعملون في منى في اليوم العاشر. What is the meaning of the question? نعم. What are they doing? يعني the pilgrims. What are they doing? What actions? What deeds? What acts of worship are they doing on the 10th day at منى? What are they doing? نعم. موسى. ويحلقون. نعم. Okay, so he's saying what? That they are stoning the Jamra. يعني الجمرة الكبرى. The big stone pillar with seven stones. And when does this take place? اليوم العاشر. نعم. يعني after Fajr, before Fajr, after the rising of the sun, before the Ba'da Tulu'ih Shamsi. Ba'da Tulu'ih Shamsi. Yani after the rising of the sun. Meaning if the people prayed Fajr and stood at Mash'ar al-Haram and then they quickly went to Mina and they were maybe the closest people at the border and they got there quickly. Suppose they got there before the actual rising of the sun, because you're going to leave before the rising of the sun, right? So suppose the sun had not yet risen. Can they throw the stones? No. No. And not until after the rising of the sun. And most of the people are not going to get there until after sunrise. Except the people who leave in the middle of the night. They're going to get there before sunrise. They're going to probably get there before Fajr. But even if they got there after Fajr, it's not permissible to stone until after sunrise. This is one of the common mistakes of many, many, many people, especially those who abandon spending the night at Muzdalifah. This is the result of abandoning the Sunnah. They fell into another problem. Yani, that is, they threw the stones before the time that's legislated. Yani, you mean spending the night at Muzdalifah?
No, stoning.
The stoning?
Stone before the sunrise. Yeah, Allahu alam. Yani, what is the consequence of that or the penalty? But certainly, it is any contrary to the sunnah. It's not the legislated time. You know, normally anything that's done, yani, out of its legislated time, except those things that there is a permission for. Yani, the Prophet ﷺ gave permission for certain acts to be done out of their order on the 10th of Dhul Hijjah. Yani, that even though he threw the stones first, and then he sacrificed and shaved, and then made tawaf and sa'i in Mecca, when the people asked him, what if I did this first or that first? He said, la haraj. So that means he allowed for those things to be done out of order, but not out of their time. Not out of their time. That's a different matter altogether. Now, طيب, question number 12. في أي يوم يرمون الجمرة الكبرى فقط ومتى يرمونها؟ يعني the meaning of the question first. في أي يوم يرمون الجمرة الكبرى فقط؟ Only, نعم. On which day is it that only the big stone pillar, the big يعني جمرة, that only the big one is stone? Which day is that? نعم, موسى. يوم الحاج العاشر, 11th day. Do they stone it on the 10th day also? Okay, the question here is, which day is only the big Jamara stoned? Yani, in other words, there are some days when all three of them are stoned, right? But there's only one day in which one Jamara is stoned, the big one. Which day is that? Huh? Al-Yawm al-Ashir. Al-Yawm al-Ashir. The 10th day, only the Jamara al-Kubra is stoned alone. The other two are not stoned on the 10th day. Yani, the first day when the people came from Arafah and Muzdalifah, on that first day, the 10th, only the big Jamara is stoned. Naam. Okay, and the second part of the question, what? Is what? وَمَتَى يَرْمُونَهَا. And when do they actually stone it? يَرْمُونَهَا بَعْدَ تُلُوَ الشَّمْسِ. Yani, after the rising of the sun, not before. Again, this is something that we have to emphasize. If anybody's going for Hajj, make sure that you highlight this in your notes or in your books, so that when you get there and you see people getting ready to do something wrong, you can tell them, wait a minute, hold it, look, I have some proof right here that this is not permissible. Because people are not going to listen to you. Who are you? You're nobody. Everybody, thousands of people are going stoning. What are you talking about? So you have to bring something in writing that perhaps some sane person might listen to you. Some people are insane. They're not going to listen. Wallahi, they're not going to listen. Some people are not going to listen. But inshallah, some people will listen if you come prepared to show them and prove to them that you know what you're talking about. And it's better to have something in writing with some evidence and dalil. Yani, some of the scholars have talked about this particular point in some detail. And so it's good to kind of have a book with you that you can refer people back to. Question number 13. Become حصات يرمون كلا من الجمرات الثلاث. Yani, the question, yani, the meaning of the question, become حصات يرمون كلا من الجمرات الثلاث. With how many pebbles do they throw or stone each of the three stone pillars? Yani, each one of them is stoned with how many pebbles? بسبع حصيات. With seven pebbles each. Naam. Question number 14. ماذا يعملون في أيام التشريق? What is the meaning of the question? What are they doing? What are the pilgrims doing in the days of Tashriq? What are the days of Tashriq anyway? The 11th, 12th, and 13th. Yani, after the main day, after Arafat, the 10th day was stoning and sacrifice and shaving and tawaf and sa'i. All that's on the 10th. And then the days that are remaining, the 11th, 12th, and 13th, are Ayyam al-Tashriq. So what are they doing on Ayyam al-Tashriq?
They might be yadhhabuna and yahlikuna on the days of Tashriq, but probably, hopefully, they did that on the 10th. On the 10th day. Hopefully, they did that on the 10th. But it's permissible. If a person didn't complete it on the 10th, they can do it on the 11th, 12th, or 13th. But the main thing that must be done in those days, 11th, 12th, and 13th, is. Okay, they're going to be in Mina, yeah? What are they going to be doing in Mina? Aramyu, stoning, Ramyu al-Jamarat. They're going to be stoning the three stone pillars. That's the main thing they're going to be doing on the 11th, 12th, and 13th, in addition to, of course, what you're going to do every day, right? You're going to be making five prayers a day, right? Hopefully you're going to be engaged in any other acts of worship like dhikr and dua and qira'at al-Qur'an and so on. But the main things that are legislated as rites of Hajj, specifically to those days, are the stoning, the ramyu of the jamarat. Now, you have a question, Nasir? iPads and games. Yeah. So that they don't get bored, right? Nothing to do here. But play with iPads and games. Wallahu musta'an. Naam. So, in any case, whoever's going for Hajj, try to keep in mind that it requires discipline and patience. It requires a lot of discipline and patience to keep your focus and to stay engaged in that which will benefit you, as opposed to wasting your time in that which is of no benefit. After this, question number 15. Mata yaramuna al-jamarat al-thalath. Mata yaramuna al-jamarat al-thalath. Naam? في أيام التشريق في أيام التشريق which are اليوم الحادي عشرة الثاني عشرة الثالث عشرة نعم and we might add here since there's no question about it we might add here that it will be on they will be stoning on the 11th and 12th for those who are in a hurry And they will be stoning on the 11th, 12th, and 13th for those who remain behind. And some people may leave on the 12th, so they will only be stoning on the 11th and 12th. And the people who remain behind, then they will be stoning for all 3 days, 11th, 12th, and 13th. And that is what is best for whoever is able to do it. Question number 16. وَفِي أَيِّ وَقْتٍ يَرَمُونَهَا فِي أَيِّ وَقْتٍ يَرَمُونَهَا Meaning, يَرَمُونَ مَا الْجِمَارِ في أيام التشريق متى يرمونها What is the meaning of the question first? What time will they be stoning, throwing the stones at the three jamarat on the 11th, 12th and 13th? What time? Did anybody remember? Okay, there's some timing for it. Okay, it's kind of open, but there's some timing. Who knows? Who remembers clearly? Who remembers clearly, certainly, definitely? What is the time that they will be throwing the stones at the three stone pillars? After meridian, Ba'da Zawal. Ba'da Zawal. Zawal is the time when the sun is directly overhead at midday, the zenith. When the sun is at the zenith, directly overhead. Ba'da Zawal, meaning after the sun has begun to decline. Once the Salatul Dhuhr enters. Once the Salatul Dhuhr enters, then a person is allowed to stone. Not before that. Meaning, this is specifically 11th, 12th, and 13th. Remember on the 10th we said what? The person can stone when? After the rising of the sun. Ba'da Tulur al-Shams. But on the 11th, 12th, and 13th, no. Not after sunrise. Rather, after Zawal, after the sun begins to decline from the zenith. Okay, so the time, as Shaykh al-Uthaymeen rahimahullah said, the time in the Sharia is specified that it's after Zawal, the beginning of his time. As far as the end of his time, it's not specified. But what is recommended, and what is more common, is that the time should be from Ba'd al-Zawal ila al-Maghrib. During the daytime, up until Maghrib. But if a person was unable, for difficulty or hardship or whatever reason,
then it's permissible to stone after Maghrib or any time during the night, as long as they stone before Fajr. And Shaykh Uthaymeen gave a lengthy fatwa concerning this, and we don't have time to explain the detail of it now, but the point that he's making here is that the legislated time is the beginning of its time. As far as the end of it, it's not specified. So it's actually open. If a person was delayed for whatever reason, then it's permissible to stone even during the night. But what is preferable for whoever is able is to stone from after Zawal up until Maghrib. Sometimes when there are very, very crowded conditions and a lot of people are coming for Hajj, yani if a person went to the Jamarat after Dhuhr and waited for the crowd to decline, maybe they will be there until Asr, until Maghrib, it never will lighten up. It may remain crowded, yani very, very difficult for the whole day. So maybe a young person who's strong, they will be able to bear it, and they'll just go and deal with the crowd with patience, and discipline, and don't try to hurt anybody. Just be easy and get there and do it and get back. And maybe for an older person or a sick person or a woman or a pregnant woman or whatever like this, maybe they can't deal with that crowd. It really can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming. I mean, in the early years, and the first times I made Hajj as a young person, we didn't care about the crowds. But in the last later years, yani the crowds, it became clear to us that those crowds are serious. Yeah, it's serious, really. It can be dangerous. Yani there have been unfortunate accidents. A lot of people were killed because of the large crowds and people out of control. And some people not following the rules. Yani the rules, the person, you enter the Jamarat from a certain path and you come back from another path. Some people, they want to enter from the path of exiting. And some people want to exit from the path of entering. And then when you have hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, sometimes that led to very, very fatal accidents when a large number of people have died. Wallahu musta'an. Okay, after this, 17, Mata yarji'una min Mina ila Makkata. Mata yarji'una min Mina ila Makkata. Now, what is the meaning of the question? Naam, when are they returning from Mina to Mecca? When are they returning from Mina to Mecca? Yani, the people in Mina, right? They're stoning on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. So when are they returning from Mina to Mecca? Naam, Fadl. بعد الأعمال ما؟ التحلل. التحلل بعد التحلل الأولى. طيب. التحلل الأول يعني the التحلل الأول actually takes place on the 10th. يعني under normal circumstances on the 10th. يعني what do we mean by التحلل الأول؟ We mean the first state or stage of being freed from ihram. That happens on the 10th when the person yani comes to Mina and throws the stones. On the 10th. Then the person is free from ihram. The first stage of being free from ihram, except that they're not allowed to have relations with spouse. Except that. So that actually should take place on the 10th. Here, we're talking about now the people, and of course, at that time, the people may go to Mecca. So that's true. People may go to Mecca at that time. But now we're talking about, yani we have already gone to Mecca and made Tawaf and Sa'i, and now we came back to Mina, and we threw stones at the Jamarat on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Now we're talking about this return to Mecca at the end, huh? Naam. بعد رمني الجمار يعني so the people will come back return to Mecca from Mina on the 13th day يعني for those who remain behind or on the 12th day for those who are يعني مستعجل who are in a hurry okay they will return on the 13th day preferably or it's permissible to return on the 12th to Mecca يعني after throwing the stones at the three stone pillars Number 18, متى يتحلل الحاج التحلل الأول متى يتحلل الحاج التحلل الأول.
What is the meaning of the question?
Now, متى يتحلل, when does it become halal? Meaning, when does the person exit from the state of ihram? When does the pilgrim exit from the state of ihram for the first stage of yani exit from ihram? The first stage of exiting from ihram. When does this take place? Now he said ba'da al-dhab, after the sacrifice. That's one answer. What else can we say? Yawm al-Ashr? Yani immediately at sunrise or Fajr, Yawm al-Ashr? The first stage of getting out of Ihram takes place on the 10th day, Naam. Ba'da Tulu'i Shamsi, yani without doing any deeds. Ba'da Salatul Dhuhr, he says after Salatul Dhuhr, after Ramyi. Al-Jamra Al-Kubra, after stoning the big Jamra. Yani once a person stoned the big Jamra, it's permissible for them to get out of Ihram. To shave or cut their hair, take off those clothing of Ihram, take a bath, all of that's permissible at that time. Even before they throw the stone, I mean before they sacrifice, even before they go to Mecca, it's permissible to get out of the state of Ihram, the first stage of getting out of Ihram, meaning yani taking off the two cloths of Ihram, taking a bath, using scent, cutting your hair, all of that is permissible after the throwing of the stones at the big Jamra. Some people may remain in Ihram until they also make sacrifice. Some people may remain in Ihram until they go to Tawaf and Sa'i, but it's actually permissible, yani at this point of throwing the stones, it's permissible for the person to get out of Ihram. If they did things out of order, then it's also permissible after any one of these acts to get out of the state of Ihram. Any of the acts of that day. Okay, after this, number 19, وَمَتَى يَتَحَلَّلُ التَّحَلُّلُ يَعْنِي كُلَّهُ, meaning, when does the person get completely free from Ihram? Huh? Completely, totally. Now, بعد تواف الإفاضة والسعي بين الصفا والمروة. نعم. So the person is completely يعني free from the state of إحرام after making تواف, the main تواف of حج, تواف الإفاضة and the سعي. And again, يعني as I said, this is general, but there are more specifics, right, that we could mention. For example, maybe next week we may mention, but if not, we'll mention it now so that we don't forget, that depending on which type of hajj you're making, we have only talked about hajj tamattu, right? But depending on which type of hajj you're making, and if a person is making qiran or they're making ifrad, they may have already made the sa'i that's required for them of hajj at the time when they made umrah. And if that sa'i that they made with umrah counts as sa'i for hajj, for the qarin and the mufrad, yani the person who's making qiran and ifrad. Meaning the person who's making hajj alone without umrah, or the person who is making hajj with umrah in one ihram. The sa'i, if they made the sa'i at the time they first came to Mecca with their tawaf of qudum, if they made sa'i, they don't make another sa'i during hajj. Only the mutamatti, the person who's making hajj and umrah in two different states of ihram, they have to make sa'i twice. One time with their umrah, then they got out of ihram. And the second time, when they got back into ihram for hajj, they have to make it again when they come back to Mecca on the 10th or the 11th or 12th. When they make the main tawaf of hajj, they have to make sa'i again, second sa'i. As far as the other people who are not making tamattu, they only have to make one sa'i. So if they made it at the time when they made tawaf of qudum, arrival tawaf, they don't have to make it again. If they didn't make it, then they only made tawaf, then they have to make sa'i now. Okay, so some people may only be making tawaf at this time, that is the mutamatti. They may be the only ones making tawaf and sa'i at this time, and when they complete that, then they are completely out of the state of ihram. Otherwise, the rest of the people, when they make tawaf, they are finished.
from this. And then they will just go back to Mina and throw the stones on the 11th, 12th, and 13th. Okay, the last question. Mata yatufu al-hajj tawaf al-wada? Mata yatufu al-hajju tawaf al-wada'i? What is the meaning of the question? The farewell tawaf. When does the pilgrim make the farewell tawaf? Tawaf al-wada'. Okay, what is the farewell tawaf? What do we mean by that? What do we mean by tawaf al-wada', farewell tawaf? What does that mean? And it's pretty clear, right? It means when you are bidding farewell to Mecca. When you're bidding farewell to Mecca. So when is this tawaf al-wada' performed? Naam. Naam. Fadl. قَبْلَ أَنْ يُغَادِرَ مَكَّةِ قَبْلَ أَنْ يُغَادِرَ مَكَّةِ يعني they will perform تواف الوضاء before leaving Mecca. يعني just before leaving Mecca as the last act that they will perform. Okay, here we'll just make a note quickly again because perhaps I might forget next week, it's on my mind right now, that the تواف الوضاء, there's difference of opinion amongst the scholars. Is the tawaf al-wada' only wada' only connected to people making hajj, or is there also tawaf al-wada' for people who are just making umrah? And if somebody went to Mecca for umrah, do they have to make tawaf al-wada'? Well, there's difference of opinion about it, and the strongest opinion is that it's not related to umrah. It's not related to umrah. I said there's difference of opinion about it, but the more correct opinion, stronger, wallahu alam, is that it's not connected to umrah, but rather it's connected to hajj, tawaf al-wada'. And a person performing hajj, they make tawaf al-wada'. Actually, some of the scholars said even for umrah you have to make it. But even those who say that, who have that opinion, they say it's mustahab. Yani it's not wajib. They say that it's mustahab, not wajib. As far as the hajj, yani the more correct opinion is that tawaf al-wada' is connected to hajj. But if somebody holds the view that you also have to do it for umrah, well then it's mustahab. It's not wajib. It's mustahab only. As far as hajj, then yani everybody who's able has to do it, except the person who yani is prevented. Like a woman who has menses, and yani her group is traveling that day, and she's not free from menses for 2 more days, or 3 more days, or 7 more days, and there's nobody to remain behind with her, to accompany her, so then she's free. Okay, otherwise everybody has to make tawaf al-wada' who came for hajj, people who came for hajj. And in that case, yani should be made before leaving Mecca, and we say just before leaving Mecca, meaning that the person should try to delay it until everything else is arranged and they're ready to travel, and the last thing that they do, yani, should be the tawaf of the bait, yani tawaf al-wada. And this tawaf, yani, does not entail any of those things that we mentioned in tawaf al-qudum, the arrival tawaf. And we said that there are two specific characteristics of tawaf al-qudum that we don't see in the other tawaf al-ifadah or tawaf al-wada', and those two things are what?
Uncovering.
Naam. Uncovering, yani ramal and ittiba', yani uncovering the right shoulder. And when is that done? In tawaf al-qudum, when is it done? On the 7 circuits, the whole of the tawaf. And the ramal, when is that done? First three circuits of the tawaf, the arrival tawaf, tawaf al-qudum. Huh? The third one, the third tawaf al-wada', there's no ramal, there's no tibah. Naam, I mean, the person is going to be in their normal clothing, right? So you know that. And also there's no ramal, no running or quick, short steps around the Kaaba. Naam, you have a question, Mustafa? Yeah, it does depend on a lot of things. Depends on a number of things. It's hard to say. There's no average. There's no average because it depends on the time of year, depends on the time of day or night that you go, depends on the crowds in that particular season. Yani, if there was nobody there and a young person who can walk very quickly can make tawaf around the Kaaba, yani 7 circuits around the Kaaba, probably in any minutes. Yani, naam. There's nobody there.
Yani, walk around the Kaaba, it doesn't take that long, a few minutes. Yani, half an hour, you can do it in half an hour. Tawaf. There's nobody there. Where are you going to be at? Up in the bleachers? Yani, if you're in the walkway for the Tawaf, next to the Kaaba, close to the Kaaba, even if you're at the edge of the walkway, still, I mean, to walk around the Kaaba, it's not going to take more than a half an hour, 45 minutes. You're going to do a normal walk, except you're going to do a ramal, right? And if the person, if it's Tawaf al-Qudum, of course, and that's only in Tawaf al-Qudum, but if it's not and you're just walking, then, I mean, casually taking your time, and it can't take more than 45 minutes. Now, not that far, you know. That's Tawaf. Forget about Sa'i, is another matter altogether. Okay, now, that's if there's nobody there, and you're young and healthy, and you're able to walk, you're not walking around with a cane, or, you know, or whatever stuff, right? Now, if it's crowded, then, and it's different, right? Because now, and even if you're down on the ground floor, the Tawaf circle is going to become bigger when it's crowded, right? So maybe you're going to be far away, that means you're going to walk a greater distance. And the crowds are going to slow you down from walking quickly, right? And so, yani, that means the time now can, yani, increase to hours. Making Tawaf might take, yani, 3 or 4 hours. That's possible. And if you're up on the roof going around the whole masjid, al-Masjid al-Haram, then it might take a day. And there's no telling. The time is, yani, there's no average time, you know, because that walk around the roof, yani, one circuit might take an hour in crowds. So imagine 7 circuits. I mean, it can take, you know, a day. Of course, you got to stop and pray too if you're doing that 7-hour Tawaf, right? You got to stop and pray Dhuhr, Asr, Maghrib. I mean, you stop and you continue where you left off at. You stop and continue where you left off. You don't have to start from the beginning each circuit now. Yeah, it's possible you could forget. Now, Abu Bakr.
You're making Tawaf.
No.
You're forgetting. You make six circuits or 7 circuits.
No.
So what do you do in that?
Yeah, the general rule is, you know, al-bina' al-yaqeen. That's the general rule, right? Same like in Salat. Person is making Salat and they don't remember if they made 3 rak'ah or 4 rak'ah. So you should base your count on what you are certain about. Al-bina' al-yaqeen. Yani, you are sure that you made 2, but the third one you are in doubt about. So you count 2. And then you, yani, finish what remains, right? So the same thing in Tawaf, same rule. And if a person is not sure, and I'm in the 5th circuit or 6th circuit, I'm sure I did 5 for sure, but the 6th one I'm in doubt about. Then you count 5 and finish what remains. Huh?
What about the sutra?
About the sutra, now. Yeah, that's the problem. A person is making 2 rak'ah behind Maqam Ibrahim. What about them having a sutra, praying with a sutra so people not walking in front of you? And it can be difficult. And sometimes 2 people, they will pray together, right? One of them will pray and the other one will stand as a sutra. And then the other one will pray and he will stand for him. Or sometimes a person prays behind something, anything that you can find, any place, anywhere, even a person. Maybe a person is sitting, you know, just reading Quran or something, you know, you can pray behind them. But you have to make some effort to try to pray with the sutra. Otherwise, yani, you do the best you can, fattaqullah mastata'atum. Do the best that you can. After that, yani, you're free of blame, you know, because there are also people that should not be walking in front of you, right? If you have a sutra, people should respect that. If you don't have a sutra, then you put yourself out there, right? So you become responsible, and then they also become responsible. Because even if you don't have a sutra, it doesn't mean that it's okay for them to walk in front of you. So it's your fault first for not having a sutra, and then it's their fault for, yani, just walking in front of you because you don't have a sutra. Now,
the person is making Tawaf, for example, and he passes in front of you. You stop him, and it doesn't matter.
Nah, if you are praying and anybody walks in front of you, no matter what they're doing, making Tawaf or anything else, you should stop them. Huh? But if there's no way for that person to go, then what? And if it's crowded, maybe that person has no option. It's not like they can move over, go here. There's no place to go. No place to go. It's 3 million people there. Where are they gonna go? There's no place to go.
So that means that it's prohibited for a person to pray in the places where people have to pass. It's prohibited to pray in those places. And that's why the scholars, they say, don't pray in a doorway, don't pray in a walkway, don't pray in an aisle, don't pray in the places where the people got to pass. Because you then become the cause of people walking in front of you. So that the blame is on you first. And the blame is on them if they have an option. And even though it's a walkway, if they can do something else, then they must do something else instead of walking in front of you. But if they have no option, then the blame is on you alone who prays in the place where people have to pass. Yani, the prayer after tawaf, yani rak'atain, those two rak'ah behind Maqam Ibrahim, yani should be prayed anywhere behind Maqam Ibrahim. The best that a person can pray, directly behind it, or a little bit behind it, or further behind it, or even, yani, if they can't find any place, then wherever they pray in the masjid, yani, it's permissible. But it's preferably, a person should be able to know that they are behind the Maqam Ibrahim. That's the best situation. Now, nasir. Stay away far from the Shiite people. They're not the only ones, but yeah, we'll single them out because they are khabith anyway, right? But yeah, they don't have respect for other people. They don't have respect for other people. Yeah, they look different. They dress different and they look different and they have their leaders in front of them, you know, dressed in their black, you know, garment to recognize that they are the leaders, the imams, the scholars. You'll see them, you know them. They definitely are different. They weren't allowed to what? In any case, yani, this is a political situation that may change from any time, from one year to the next. You know, in the past 25 years, the Iranian people specifically, Shiites from Iran, you know, have caused a lot of trouble during Hajj season, a lot of corruption, a lot of, you know, violence and all kind of disruption of the Hajj. And they go there with that intent. That's their intent. And they come from their country with the intent of disrupting the Hajj and causing confusion and causing harm to people. And they might try to bring explosives or anything. They do anything. You know, these people, they are unpredictable. They have no principles at all whatsoever. I know them firsthand. I know the Shiite people firsthand. Okay, and the Shiites, we can say honestly, they are not all the same. Some of them are more fanatical, some of them are more extremist, some of them are more deviant than others. They are not all the same. There's not one madhab of Shia. They are Shiites who are close to the people of Sunnah. Huh? And they are Shiites who are far away, Shiites who are out of Islam. They are not even Muslims. So they are different Shiites, okay? But the people who come from Iran, overwhelming majority of them, Ithna Asha Shia, believe in the 12 infallible Imams. What they believe in is kufr, there's no doubt about it. That's a fact. That's established. I don't hesitate to say it. This is well known. And the scholars of Islam have declared that what they believe in is kufr. That's different than saying that any one of them is a kafir. Okay? Be careful. What they believe in, I said clearly. I have no hesitation to say what they believe in is kufr. But we don't say that every one of them is a kafir. Okay? The ruling on an individual person is different than the ruling on an action. What they believe is belief that's kufr. What the actions they do are actions of kufr. But we can't say that every individual is a kafir because circumstances are different, okay? So, that being said, what I'm saying is, some of these people are actually kafirs. They might do anything. Not all of them are kafirs. So we shouldn't assume that a person is Shiite, then we declare him to be a kafir. That's not our, that's not the way of, the sunnah. That's not how we do it, okay? But we know that, and they believe, for example, that the imams, the 12 imams, are infallible. They're infallible. Yani, even some of the Shiites themselves say that the belief that the imams have the characteristics of divinity, sifat al-ilahiyya. Some Shiites, I have this in writing, from Shiites said this, that the people who believe that are kafirs. That's what Shiites said about the other Shiites. Huh? And this is a book that I got this from, it's printed in Iran. It's from the Shiites themselves. Huh? So we're saying that the person who believes that, that's kufr, for sure, no doubt about it. But declaring a person to be a kafir has shurut and mawaniya. Okay, there are conditions and then there are prohibitive factors, and then we have to look at that. So we don't engage in this. This is not our realm. We leave that to the scholars, okay? But so that being said, I think that these people, definitely they should be avoided at all costs. Sometimes they might
make trouble, and therefore the government might prevent people coming from Iran to even come for Hajj. That has happened in the past. And then sometimes they may allow them. And if they start acting like they're sensible and sane and reasonable, they might allow them to come. So most of the time they're coming. So it's very likely that you're going to see them there if you go for Hajj. It's no telling what may happen from one year to the next. But yes, avoid them, stay away from them. Just try to keep clear of them. Wallahu musta'an. May Allah save us from this kind of deviation and corruption that these people are upon, really. If anybody knows what they really believe, most of the Muslims really don't know what the Shiites believe. Most of the people who haven't studied their books, what is written in their books, not what other people wrote about them. If you haven't studied this, you might not know just how extreme these people have gone in what they believe and in their practices. You might not really know. But believe me, they have gone to the all extremes. There's no end to the deviation and corruption that these people hold as their fundamental beliefs. And from amongst their fundamental beliefs, that I have read in books from Shiites, that we got from the Shiites themselves, and I used to try to get their books from them and copy some of the stuff from it so that we can have documentation of it. And they didn't know what was going on, so they used to lend us their books and we used to copy them. And sometimes we found them in places where you can purchase them and we bought them. From amongst what they believe is that the 12 Imams are infallible. They have characteristics of divinity. They know the unseen. They only die if they will. They control the atoms of the universe. And whoever doesn't believe this, what I just stated and more, whoever doesn't believe is a kafir. That means to them, we are kafirs. So this is like a picture, summary picture of how these people are. They actually say that whoever doesn't believe this is a kafir. So we obviously don't believe it, right? No. Okay, we just have a couple of minutes remaining. If there are any questions about Hajj, we can do that. If anybody didn't get one of these sheets here last week, anybody didn't get one of these that we gave out last week, it's just a summary of the supplications that a person should say during Umrah. This is just an Umrah guide.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you make it too often, what happened? Yeah.
When you have to start from
the beginning. No, you don't have to start from the beginning. You do not have to start from the beginning. There's a difference of opinion about this is a fiqh issue, right? But the strongest opinion, and the reason why I say the strongest opinion is because having studied the various views and the evidences for each of them, it became clear that those scholars who say that tahara is not a condition for tawaf, they are correct based on the strongest evidences. That tahara, being in a state of purification, is not a precondition for the validity of tawaf. So that means that actually if a person is making tawaf and they don't have tahara, they don't have to make wudu. But if they made wudu, they will return to where they left off at. And whatever they made up until that point is valid, and they continue where they left off at and complete whatever remains. If they made half of the fifth circuit, then what's remaining is the other half of the fifth circuit and the sixth and the seventh. And they will continue where they left off at. And if a person can remember where they left, then they can start back there. If they can't, then they can start at the beginning of the circuit and complete what circuits are remaining. But again, I'm saying that tawaf, it doesn't have as a condition for its validity that a person has to be in a state of tahara. And I'm saying there's difference of opinion about this. In my view, from examining the evidences of the different scholars, what they have concerning this, strongest view is that it's not a condition. It's not a condition for tawaf. Now, you don't have to have wudu, but you have to have wudu to pray two rak'ah after tawaf, right? I just keep that in mind. I'm just saying. Okay, it's okay. These are two separate matters, right? The two rak'ah after tawaf should be performed after, but you do have to be in wudu to pray two rak'ah. That's a fact. There's no doubt about that. There's no difference of opinion about that. There's difference of opinion about the tawaf. But if a person is in a state of tahara, that's better. That's better. If it's easy to make wudu, it's better. But it's not a condition. Now. Now. The Halim. Tawaf is like salat. Yeah, that's one of the sayings that the scholars use to say that you have to be in wudu.
But
As I said, tawaf is like salat. Yeah, there's too many differences between tawaf and salat, but in any case, yani, probably the meaning of tawaf is like salat, is that yani, you engage in worship. Yani, in the rest of the hadith, the Prophet said, in that hadith, if you look at the end of it, he said, so a person, if they speak during the tawaf, they should only speak with that which is good. So that makes us to know that tawaf is like salat, and what? That you shouldn't be talking in the tawaf, except the same way you don't talk in salat, except with that which is legislated in the salat. So the same thing with tawaf, you don't talk in the tawaf, except what's legislated in tawaf. Yani, you're not talking about the NBA championship, or the NFL, what do they call it? Super Bowl, or something like this, right? You're not talking about nonsense, but rather, you should be engaged in dhikr and dua, and reading of Quran. That's the meaning of it, Allah knows best. It doesn't mean that, yani, like salat, you have to be in tahara, so in tawaf, you have to be in tahara. No, that's not so. Now, Allahu A'lam. No. Naam. In Salat, if a person loses their state of purification and they go and make wudu, they can come back and join the congregational prayer. If they were praying in congregation, they can come back and join it. Naam, that's right. But they have to start from the beginning, right? And in other words, whatever rak'ah they made before they lost their state of tahara doesn't count. And when they come back, if they join the people in the third rak'ah, then they will join them and continue with them. They will pray three and four, fourth rak'ah, and then they have to make up the two before that, even though they prayed them before they lost their state of purification, right? As far as in tawaf, if a person came back after making wudu, then they will not make up the circuits that they made before. Rather, those circuits count. They count. Unlike in prayer, the rak'ah that you made before losing your state of purification does not count. In tawaf, the circuits that you perform before, yani breaking wudu, those circuits count. Now, Faiz. Oh, I'm sorry. You did have your hand up first. I'm sorry. Before Abdul Halim spoke. You give him? Okay, Faiz. Drinking Zamzam water, yeah. When? Okay. Good question, mashallah.
My question is related.
Yani, next week we're going to come to that. Okay, when do you drink Zamzam water? Give us your question too, so we can look at both of them together. Zamzam water should be drank standing. Now,
if you're outside, yani, like in America, you have Zamzam water. Do you also apply the same? Do you drink it standing, or do you drink it sitting down?
Naam.
What do I
make? Well, as far as what dua you make, as whatever you like, inshallah. But let's answer his question first. Zamzam should be drank in reference to the rites of Hajj. It should be drank, yani, after a person makes tawaf of the Kaaba and two rak'ah, then that's the time of drinking Zamzam. Yani, before they go to make sa'i. That is part of the rites. That is part of the rites, yani, related to the tawaf and sa'i. Yani, after the tawaf and before the sa'i. As far as drinking Zamzam standing, yani normally a person eats and drinks sitting, right? That's the sunnah. But as far as Zamzam, it's permissible to drink Zamzam standing, okay? Because the Prophet ﷺ did drink Zamzam standing. It's permissible to drink Zamzam standing. Some of the scholars say, and there's different explanations of it, but one of the explanations is because the Prophet ﷺ was doing Hajj in a crowd where it wasn't possible to sit. Yani, if a person is in the tawaf circle, yani at the place of making tawaf during Hajj or Umrah in Ramadan, then you see you will not be able to sit. Yani, there's no way to sit, not in that kind of crowd. If you sit, maybe that would be the end. Last time you sit and the people will trample you because they won't see you. And the crowds, the people can't stop the movement, they can't see. And they come to you and you're on the ground someplace sitting, and they won't be able to stop and tell people, wait, I want to stop for a minute, there's somebody in front of me. Nobody's stopping, the crowd is moving, it's out of control. So, no, you can't sit there. So that's one of the explanations. But in any case, even if we don't say there's really any explanation, if we just say the Prophet ﷺ drank Zamzam standing, So it's permissible to drink Zamzam standing anywhere, at any time. And if we say that we don't know the specific reason, it was due to crowds. And if those guys who say it was due to the crowd, say that if there's no crowd, then sit. Because the normal rule for eating and drinking is that you sit. The normal rule for eating and drinking is that you sit. They are saying that it's not sunnah to drink Zamzam water standing. They're saying he drank standing because it was crowded.
That's the illah.
That's the illah. Okay, that's what some scholars are saying. But if we ignore that opinion and we say, what's your proof? And he, okay, it was crowded, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that that's really the reason. It appears to be the reason. But let's say I want to argue the point. I don't accept that. So, if I don't accept that, that that's the reason. And I say that the Prophet ﷺ drank Zamzam standing for a special reason, because it's Zamzam. Then do it across the board. Drink Zamzam standing. Now, anytime, anywhere. In Mecca or outside of Mecca. In America or outside of Hajj or anytime. But probably, Wallahu A'lam. I'm saying, that's why I'm saying there's difference of opinion. Some people are saying that's specific to that place and time, and it was due to the crowd. And if a person is not in that place and time and there's no crowd, so no need to stand, sit and drink. That's the normal rule for eating and drinking, sitting. Allahu A'lam. Okay, we're gonna stop in, after this question. If there's one or two questions, that's it, we're gonna stop, inshallah. And again, next week, inshallah, we'll go through the whole Hajj from beginning to end. If somebody send me a reminder, I'll try to see if I can send you the notes that we're going to use for next week's class so you can see it before. And then hopefully next week, inshallah, we'll read through it. Now. Okay, after Tawaf, an elderly person is trying to make Tawaf. And the people are rushing him. Uh-huh. Yeah, you grabbed him and moved him. Naam, of course. Naam, you saved his life, maybe. Nothing wrong with that. You can do that. Naam. He was in sujood. Allahu musta'an. Anyway, be aware of your circumstances. In Hajj, it's not like normal situations, okay? It is very overcrowding. Some people are, you know, agitated. Some people are not in their normal state of mind. So be careful and pay attention. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika.
أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت أستغفرك وأتوب إليك.